Welcome to show number 44 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by SportsCardRadio.com. Hello and welcome to the Sports Card Show. Hopefully everybody is doing well out there. Got quite a bit to talk about today. Actually have two interview guests for everybody that wants more interviews. We're going to have two interview guests, although they're both two people that we've had on the show before, so I can't say that I've went out of my way to expand my horizons, although two worthy guests that will have very important information to bring you. The first is an interview I actually taped about 2 weeks ago, but after checking out thebenchtrading.com, they still need help completing the Yankee Stadium Legacy Collection set. And obviously the interview that we have coming up shortly will have more details on that. So if you haven't participated on it, I said in the interview it was about a year ago. It ends up being about maybe like 6 to 8 months ago. They still need a little bit of help getting over the hump and get this set to auction for a great cause. So you want to stay tuned for that. The next interview guest, as you can imagine, will be my brother from sportscardreport.info. If you haven't seen the banners on Sports Card Radio, my brother has put some time into a nice little blog. Gives you a nice little rundown just kind of what's happening throughout the sports card world on other people's blogs, mainly what's happening with the major sets and things like that. So it's a cool site. If you don't have time to visit a bunch of different sites, it kind of gives it all to you together. SportsCardReport.info. Ryan's going to have some reports and some coverage on Upper Deck's trouble. I remember promising that to everybody on the last show, and my brother's been doing blogs and things like that, and I think he's probably a little bit more knowledgeable on what's been going on. So we'll bring him on, talk about that, maybe talk about some other things. We'll see what happens. So that should be a segment you should look forward to. Other than that, we'll have one product to review. I do believe Upper Deck Exquisite Football was pushed back just slightly, so we'll probably wait till the next show to talk about that. I think we were going to talk about that. And 2010 Topps Heritage Baseball. And since Heritage Baseball did come out on time, which was earlier this previous week or last week, we'll talk about that. Some of the cards that are in there, I'm sure by now you've seen it. It's very similar to previous years. You have the chrome parallels and some of the other inserts that you've seen in the past. But some nice cards nonetheless. If you were getting tired of Topps Series 1 baseball, Topps Heritage came just in time. So we'll talk about that after this short break. We'll talk about that. Topps Heritage baseball. We'll talk to Tim Danielson from thebenchtrading.com after that. And finally, we'll wrap it up with some talk about Upper Deck, Topps, and the MLB, and the courtroom, and outside the courtroom, and all that after this. I was so high, I did not recognize the fire burning in her eyes, the chaos that controlled my mind. I whispered goodbye, she got on a plane, never to return again, but always in my heart. Oh, this love has taken its toll on me, she said goodbye too many times before. Back, let's talk a little bit about the latest baseball release. As you know, despite Upper Deck's best efforts, and we'll talk about those in a couple segments, Topps has the exclusive deal to make baseball cards. Obviously, it's a little cloudy, but Topps Heritage is their latest release, 24 packs, 8 cards per pack, and the best thing is you get one stick of bubble gum in each pack. So if you buy a whole box, you're going to be loaded up with some bubble gum. So it's like getting a free thing of like a stick of bubble gum. One autograph or one relic card per box. So loaded up with some cardboard. Luckily, there's some decent stuff in here if you're kind of a set collector, if you're somebody that likes to put things together. This is definitely the set for you. It's a huge base set. We're talking 500 total cards, actually somewhat more than there. There's quite a few variations. There's 75 short prints. Topps recently announced that there's some color variations and things like that, so you want to take a close look at your cards and make sure you don't have one of those. There's several different kind of inserts and things like that. They don't really call them inserts, but within the base set, you have like World Series highlights. There's combos. There's Sporting News All-Stars. There's team cards, which have cool pictures of the whole teams. Manager cards. Baseball thrills. Not exactly sure what those are. SP short prints. We talked about those. There's 75 of those. Topps Dice game variation cards. Those are pretty cool. And the Chase 61, which is kind of the theme to the entire Topps Heritage set this year, is the 1961 kind of set design. And they kind of went back to Chase 61, kind of Chase 61 home runs with Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle. And they throw Babe Ruth in there, I guess, because they have a few of his cuts. But there's some cut autographs that are very nice in here of those players. You also find in the original 1961 Topps set, there were Topps Stamps cards. These have been framed in the 2010 version. You can find green and brown versions. So there's two to each version. There's 207 total cards, at least that's what I have here. And there's also in hobby boxes only, so not from Target and retail boxes and things like that. Hobby only, they have original buybacks from the 1961 set. So you actually have a chance to get some of the cards from the original set in there. There's real one autographs. Obviously, the one autograph per box is kind of a killer. It's not that boxes are that expensive of this stuff, but if you are looking for lots of hits or a really box that delivers a lot of hits, this is not really the box for you. But if you're into kind of collecting sets and putting together large sets, this is definitely the set for you. Of the 75 SP base cards, just some highlights: Tim Lincecum All-Star card, Francisco Rodriguez All-Star, Mariano Rivera. Quite a few of the All-Star and MVP cards happen to be SP. And also the Philadelphia Phillies team card is SP, so that's pretty cool. And Ken Griffey Jr. card number 430 is all SP. I noticed Tim Lincecum appeared on here a few times. Derek Jeter appeared on here a few times. I believe Albert Pujols as well. So Topps seemed to short print some of the better names. So that's kind of interesting. Of the big hits, some of the nice on-card autographs, every autograph is on-card, so you'll see no stickers in a product like this. Aside from the cut autographs from Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris and players like that that have passed away. So it's a very nice set. When you do hit that nice autograph, it's very hit and miss on the box. I wouldn't be trying to box hoping to hit a cut autograph or a buyback stamp because it's probably not going to happen. Topps tends to load up a product like this, but it's a nice set. The only maybe complaint that I have, aside from not getting that many hits per box, is the inserts. There's only, you get six inserts per box, but there's really only four sets of inserts to choose from, so there's not really that many total cards. There's really only 45 total insert cards, so you get six per box, so you get over 10% if you get no duplicates. So it's really not that big of a chase to get the insert cards, although the SP and the color variations and things like that that's announced slowly after the product comes out or make it very interesting, because if you opened up a couple boxes of this and think you totally got slapped, well, maybe you got a couple SP cards and maybe there's some other cards in there that you didn't really notice that might end up having some value down the road or help you complete your set easier than you thought you would. That about wraps it up. February's probably a slightly better month. March is probably a slightly better month for products. So we'll cover Exquisite Football as it comes out this month. I know baseball has a couple products coming out this month as well, including a lot of new 2010 football products, and maybe with my brother, if we can remember it, we'll talk about this combine. I've been watching the combine video. I don't mean to slip it in at the end of a baseball preview segment, but been watching some combine video online, so maybe we'll talk about that and Tim Tebow and all the other guys, the workout warriors that have appeared in Indianapolis. Well, after this very short break, this interview happened 2 weeks ago, but it is still extremely current because you can still help donate cards to the benchtrading.com's charity drive to help cancer research and to help find a cure for this disease that affects millions of people, not only in this country, but around the world. So you want to hang on for that interview. And after that segment, be sure to come back. We'll talk about Upper Deck's legal troubles, and hopefully we'll slip in some combine and maybe some other sports news with my brother from sportscardreport.info. He was too cheap to buy the .com, I guess, or I don't think it was available, but he's too cheap to even go .net. He went all the way down to .info, so that tells you the caliber of site and the caliber of information that you're getting there. Obviously, I'm joking. It is a very nice blog, and you'll want to check it out. After this very short break, we will be back. On our own. We don't need anything or anyone. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? I don't quite. And we are back. We are joined today on the telephone by Tim Danielson, and he is from The Bench Trading. And as you can remember, I guess it was about a year ago now, Tim, that we talked about the YSL charity drive that you have going on over at thebenchtrading.com. And maybe you can tell listeners that don't know anything about it or maybe need their memories refreshed just a little bit about what the charity drive is, how it got started, and maybe give an update on your progress.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me back. It was about a year ago. I was on your show. TheBenchTrading.com is a online sports card forum where people can get on there and meet and post wall lists and trade lists, and it's free to join, and we've got over 8,000 members, and it's just a really great family-friendly site. We decided in 2008 that we wanted to do a charity drive, and that January, Upper Deck produced a set called the Yankee Stadium Legacy. It had a card for every game and major event ever held at Old Yankee Stadium. It ended up being over 6,700 cards in size. And we set out to collect this set. And once completed, we are going to auction it off and donate the proceeds to the V Foundation for Cancer Research. As of the second weekend in February, we have over 85% of the set complete. That is just under 1,000 cards that we need to collect. And as any set collector knows, you know, once you get down to those last few, they seem harder to get. We do have an opportunity to have the set listed for the ESPN Sports Radio Auction this July. That's an event that coincides with the baseball All-Star Break, Home Run Derby, Jimmy V, golf charity classic they have, and we would like to have the set in by then because it's just a perfect timing and tie into our charity drive. It's also going to be right on time at the ESPYs, and I'm sure hope most people are familiar with the Jimmy V Award they have every year at the ESPYs.
Yes.
And both the V Foundation and the ESPN will help us get this set in there if we get it completed in time.
Sounds good. Is there any reason why these last cards are harder to get? Are there SPs in the set, or is it just these happen to be the ones that have come in toward the tail end?
There's no short printed cards per se in the set. The cards themselves were released in different blocks or different sets throughout the 2008 season. We are missing a lot of cards from some of the higher-end products in 2008, like Upper Deck Exquisite and a couple of other higher-end products. The cards themselves were inserted at about four Yankee Stadium cards per box.
I see.
So there's a few in the middle there. The going rate of the cards, book value, like your Derek Jeters and Babe Ruth, are about $8, and a lot of your common insert cards are about $3. So there just seems to be, like I said, not any really short-printed ones, but there's maybe some less quantity of product opened up of the higher-end products, I guess.
I see. And if somebody wanted to get involved, if they had maybe one card or maybe even they didn't have any of these cards, what are some of the ways they can get involved here to contribute to your charity drive?
I want to encourage everybody to check out thebenchtrading.com. Again, it's a free site to join. We specialize a lot in baseball, but we do have other sports, obviously football, basketball, and hockey cards all traded actively on the site. We have a link at the top of the page that goes directly to our dedicated YSL charity page. And on there, there's my email address, and there's the address to send cards to. We also have on there a link to our current want list that's updated about every 3 days as new cards come in. And even if people don't have any cards themselves, or they haven't opened any 2008 products, one thing we encourage on our site is if you're trying to set up a trade and one side's a couple dollars short, you can say, hey, we'll take a Yankee Stadium card to even out that trade, and then you can donate that. As we get more and more cards in, we are getting more and more duplicates, and then that enables us to trade our duplicates for cards that we need.
I see.
I'm active on the Upper Deck blogs, and I met a couple of collectors that are also collecting the Yankee Stadium set there, and we've been able to trade large chunks of duplicates for each other to help each other out. So every card does help. Even if it's one that's not on our want list, we'll still take it because that is valuable trading material for us.
Okay, that sounds great. So everybody can get involved by going to thebenchtrading.com, seeing what cards they have. Even if they already have these cards, it sounds like you can send them in and they can work out trades. And it seems like a very easy thing to get involved in. And it's going to go to a great cause. So check out thebenchtrading.com. Now, before we get you out of here, Tim, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Have you purchased any 2010 baseball product lately?
I personally have not purchased any 2010 baseball products. I have a contact inside Upper Deck, though, and have been following their loss of their MLB license. And I know some people that are kind of on the fence. They're waiting to see what products come out and kind of watching to see how that goes. Of course, without the MLB license, Upper Deck can't show team logos and the team name, just the city they're from. I personally haven't bought many boxes of baseball specifically, but I do know that there is actually talked about on our site.
Right, and we're actually, that's a lot of what we're talking about today on the show, is actually the complications that are going between Topps and the MLB and some of the other issues. Do you have an opinion on that? Do you really mind that Upper Deck is coming in there and is still making baseball cards? They've kind of left the basketball card market, so to speak, but it really seems like they have almost a full slate of lineup for baseball this year. Do you have any opinion on that? Do you think the hobby is benefiting from this or hurting for it, or it doesn't really matter?
I really think there's a benefit to have the competition.
Right.
I liked when I was really active in collecting sets, the option to choose between Topps, Upper Deck, and even Donruss. Some of my favorite designs, some of my favorite personal cards came from the DLP Donruss Leaf Playoff brand.
Right.
It's very similar to, and I'm looking at it a lot of the ways, when Donruss lost their both MLB and Major League Baseball Players Association licenses, I think in 2006, that they came out with their Donruss Elite Extra Edition, which focused more on up-and-coming, unsigned either college stars or minor league players that didn't have a major league contract yet, and, of course, retired stars.
Right.
And the same, those were attractive card designs. Again, personally, I like the variety in the competition.
Definitely.
The competition makes it so other companies hold each other accountable. I mean, they have to put out the better product and try and win the collectors to their brand, which improves the product and you know, makes it so there's better quality out there. Personally, I do miss, you know, Adonis in being in baseball a lot. And again, on a personal note, I'm shifting my trading. I'm still collecting my favorite baseball players, but as far as opening boxes and sets, I'm actually shifting more toward both NBA and NFL with the Panini brand now.
I see.
So.
Okay, excellent. Well, Tim, it is Valentine's Day, so you might have a special someone to get off to here, so we'll let you go. Thank you for joining us again. Again, everybody can head on over to the Bench Trading and get involved and help Tim and the Bench Trading get to the last push drive of filling this charity drive and making sure they can sell this set and raise a bunch of money for the Jimmy V Foundation. You got anything left to say for everybody out there, Tim?
I just want to thank you, Tim, for having me on the show. I'll definitely keep you guys updated and posted on our progress. And again, I just want to say it's free to join the site, and any cards that people have that are willing to donate, even if it's a duplicate for us, we'll still gladly take it because that'll just make us stronger in trading for cards that we do need. Again, we've got just under 1,000 cards left to go, and about 5 months to finish it if we want to get it done in time for the All-Star break and the ESPN Radio Auction this summer. So every card helps.
Sounds good. All right. Thank you so much, Tim. And I'm sure we'll catch up with you again, hopefully very soon, when the YSL charity drive is complete and you guys are ready to take it to auction.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, thank you, Tim.
And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good.
And we are back, and as promised, we are joined by my brother Ryan from sportscardreport.info. Why don't you say hello to everybody, Ryan?
How's it going? Thanks for the nice shout out you just gave me going cheap on the .info. That was really nice.
It's not my fault that your PayPal account is not very rich with funds and you had to go with the .info, but why don't we get down to the heart of the matter, why you're here, why we actually bring you onto this show is to enlighten people. For those that don't know, why don't you break down kind of the issues that Upper Deck and Topps have had, and now obviously Major League Baseball, who kind of controls this whole thing, is obviously getting in this three-ring circus, and maybe break it down to the people out there on what's going on.
Well, Upper Deck might be in a little bit of financial trouble. Maybe they'll have to go to the .info, upperdeck.info.
They're not as quite as in much financial trouble as sportscardreport.info is. Come on, let's...
I don't know. Wait a second here. First things first, we'll get into the lawsuits in a minute. There's two lawsuits, one that was settled, one that is still pending, that have a lot of questions surrounding Upper Deck about their financial stability, kind of what are they going to do going forward. But let's talk about first. Here's a rumor. Now, this is not based on any kind of fact, but I did see this on a very high-profile sports car distributor website.
So not sportscarreport.info.
No, it was not. This is not a made-up rumor from sportscardreport.info. I promise you this. This is from somebody reputable. Supposedly, a sports card company, I'm not saying it's Upper Deck, but we can all assume here, a sports card company owes the IRS $100
million. $100
million. Yeah. Okay, so when I said they maybe were going to have to go to the .info, now that you know about the $100 million potentially being in debt, tell me another sports card company besides except for Topps, and they appear to be doing pretty well. Who else would owe the IRS $100 million? Nobody.
What was the whole context of the article on the sports card distributor website?
Okay, it was a one-sentence rumor. This was actually about a month ago, right, that I read this. So this is not something that's...
So we're not breaking news here.
Not at all. No, this is not something that I read today.
Okay.
But this is something that has been floated about. So that's first things first. They could be owing Uncle Sam $100 million. Okay, number one.
Okay.
Number two, before we get to the lawsuits, they already lost out with baseball, apparently. We'll get into the baseball lawsuit in a second.
Exactly. Like that I might said, not even mean
yeah,
anything.
It might not mean anything, but they did lose out on the logo deal and the exclusive deal to Topps with MLB baseball cards. Okay, number one. There is rumors. I read actually this in a Forbes article. They were talking about Panini basketball, but the Panini, I think it was a CEO, slipped in, "Oh, I've already talked to the NFL about remaking the football card kind of deal for the NFL." So maybe that means the NFL wants to go to an exclusive. NFL always usually does exclusive, or they used to in the past a lot with the apparel. Reebok had it for 10, 15 years. Madden is the only video game.
They've always seemed to have a different stance. I mean, now that the other companies have taken the stance that exclusive is supposedly the way to go, I know that other companies have played with that in the past, and football has always opened it up to as many companies as possible. So I'll believe it when I see it. I know if Upper Deck loses football, then they better hope some of these other lawsuits that are pending go their way.
Well, then there was a little rumor about hockey as well. I didn't read too much into it, but UD's been locked in with hockey for a while, and it's been kind of a bread and butter for them for a while. And I think Panini might even try to jump into the hockey game and cut into that market share as well. So the $100 million losing out on the baseball license, rumors about this football license, hockey license, things are not looking good. Here's probably why things aren't looking good, is because they got kind of tied up in these lawsuits that are directly responsible for themselves. Okay, they had a distribution deal. Here's lawsuit number one. They had a distribution deal with Konami,
and they is Upper Deck.
Upper Deck, right? They is Upper Deck.
Okay.
Upper Deck and Konami had a distribution deal to produce Yu-Gi-Oh cards in the United States. Upper Deck decided to go out on their own and counterfeit about 600,000 Yu-Gi-Oh cards and kind of sell them out the back door, in a sense, and make money on that.
So basically what they were doing is they have an agreement, I'm guessing here, that they have an agreement with Konami to produce X amount of cards, and when X cards get sold, Konami gets some kind of royalty or some kind of payment for the use of those action figures or whatever they were putting on those cards. And Upper Deck, to avoid paying that portion of this portion of the transaction, they were going out on their own and making cards and selling them over and above Konami's knowledge.
Exactly. And apparently it was about 500,000 to 600,000 cards. It was there were apparently 5 UD executives that were involved, so this was very high level. There were apparently one of the chief executives of the company, a witness testified that she saw him tear up Yu-Gi-Oh cards, some of the counterfeit Yu-Gi-Oh cards. Some of the UD execs got on the stand and pleaded the Fifth Amendment. The Fifth Amendment's there for a reason, but I think we all know when somebody pleads the Fifth Amendment what the deal is going on.
Okay. Right. I saw the same thing that I believe his last name is Williams, the CEO of or president of Upper Deck, was literally seen shredding cards.
And yeah.
I believe the quote as well was that he told some distributors, he told them to not ask where the Yu-Gi-Oh cards came from, basically. He told right. them not to ask any questions about the cards. He was probably offering them at a discount because he was avoiding paying any kind of... I'm not privy on those kind of licensing agreements, but I can imagine they're in the favor of Konami because they own the actual property that Upper Deck is making money on. It would be just like if I wanted to run reruns of ESPN on Sports Car Radio. I'd have no way of doing that legally without actually contacting ESPN. Obviously, plenty of people go behind people's backs, but for a company as trying to run their business, it seems as reputable as Upper Deck appears on the outside, it appears moves like this make you wonder what other things are going on.
So, yeah, all this went down. The Konami lawyers were talking about getting a lot of money. Like, I want to say $70 million or $700 million.
Right, I heard big numbers, but that's usually lawyer speak that are trying to... I mean, it's just like an agent for a number one draft pick. When they see dollars to be had, they throw out dollar figures in the press on purpose to kind of build up the public perception that might be a worthy figure. So I don't take so much solace in that. What did the lawsuit end up settling for?
We don't know. Nobody knows the dollar amount. How much are 600,000 Yu-Gi-Oh cards are worth? I think that's what it all boils down to. I think we're talking about, I guessed on a blog post that I wrote on your blog, I think I said 7 to 10 million or something like 5 to 10 million or something like
probably
that.
Probably I'm guessing somewhere in that range, although I mean you're giving the credit of, you know, almost $2 a card value. I'm not exactly sure if $2 per card goes directly into Konami's profit. However, there are residual and other kind of values and other kind of contract breaches and all kinds of other counterfeit issues that add on to the actual value of the cards that were sold. Obviously, some of the distributors that got these at a bargain basement price might be wondering, hey, what the heck? Why do I got to pay $30 more a box now all of a sudden? Or things like that. So it's a slippery slope. Upper Deck decided to go down it, and they've also decided to go down the path of Donruss has gone down this path, I think pre-Panini, by producing baseball sets without a baseball license with pictures, not just in... We saw 2009 Donruss Elite Extra Edition had all college uniforms, and apparently that's okay.
They have a photo license.
They have a photo
they
license.
They have an MLB photo license.
So Upper Deck is now, after this Konami battle that they had, is now battling with Topps and the MLB, who is obviously siding with the company that they signed a contract with. And why don't you let us know what is going on in that situation?
So, as we said, Upper Deck has an MLB photo license, so they could make cards with players' photos on them. What they don't have is the right to use logos and colors associated with the teams. So, since 2009, when their deal expired and Topps picked it up, and Topps is exclusive with the MLB, Upper Deck came out with 2009 Ultimate Collection, and they came out with 2010 Upper Deck Series 1. And they obviously used pictures of the players, but some of the logos were a little questionable, whether or not they were blurring out logos. They didn't use team names.
And these are logos on the players' uniforms, or is
exactly
it logos on the cards?
Like the New York Yankees uniform. I mean, like the New York Yankees uniform, New York Yankees hat logo, San Francisco Giant. If you have a Buster Posey card and you make the color scheme of the card orange and black, they could take issue with that and they could sue you for that.
And this is why we see, like, maybe Shaq in, like, an Icy Hot commercial where he has a generic jersey on. But it's obviously he's in a Cavs. I've seen it when he was with Phoenix. It was an obvious kind of photoshopped jersey. You've seen him in magazines.
Those are the dumbest commercials, too.
You see that, and you also see other card companies that do a blatant job. I remember back in the day, I guess it was Classic, and I think there was like Team Best or something in Four Sport, and they used to blur the jerseys out pretty blatantly. And I'm guessing you have a photo license, but in order to combo that with cards, I take it you need a trading card license.
Right, or the right to use the logos, team trademarks, things like that, and they don't have that. Topps has that. And Topps is very proud of that and has displayed that on all their packaging and all the cards and so forth. So Topps isn't actually suing Upper Deck over this. They're going to let MLB Properties do this. And they're going to go to court on... Trial's been set for April 19th on this. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. In addition, Upper Deck already owes MLB Properties $2.3 million from other deals. So here's some more money that Upper Deck supposedly owes some people. But they're going to go to trial April 19th. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. Because what happens if the court rules in favor that Upper Deck is not in the wrong and the cards that they're putting out are, can be put out? What are they going to do? What is Topps going to do? Now Topps maybe feels screwed because they paid a lot of money for their deal. And now Upper Deck has free reign to make the cards that they want.
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question. There's been other lawsuits in the past where I believe even with the Donruss example, I think it was 2007 or 2006, Donruss Elite Extra Edition and Prime Cuts Baseball, the MLB took issues with those sets, and things happened. And now I believe this is a grander issue where it's not just one set being brought out. It's Upper Deck blatantly looking like they're planning an entire full run of baseball products that they had last year with SB Authentic and pretty much the full gamut of cards. Like almost like they didn't even skip a beat losing the baseball license. So this lawsuit, I think, is the one that is going to decide it from now on into the future whether or not these exclusive deals that these sports leagues, the NBA and Major League Baseball and the NFL, are even on grounds to be even possible, something that they can even negotiate, because I'm sure the whole ploy on their end is if they have an exclusive deal come year 2, 3, 4, fifth time renewing it, it's just like the Super Bowl. The networks lose money renewing the rights to the Super Bowl, but it's kind of a network prestige thing, and I think the people that manage these sports leagues thinks the same thing can happen in sports cards. So we'll even see if they stand on legal ground, and we'll see what happens in this court case. But basically, I feel if the court comes back and rules in favor of Upper Deck and feels that, hey, you've got a photo license, we don't see that there's much wrong going on here, considering people have websites and make plenty of money mimicking the colors and usage of sport. I mean, Sports Card Radio is a prime example as well of, you know, taking advantage of sporting athletics and profiting on them, all in a good legal manner. Whether or not the exclusive rights that Topps has negotiated with the MLB, could that even stand up in the courtroom? And we'll see what happens. And if the court rules in favor of Upper Deck, Topps will run right back into the basketball and football card game. Upper Deck will start making basketball cards again. Nobody will care about any of these exclusive deals that have gone down the last year and a half, 2 years, because I believe this is a pivotal case, and whatever is decided here is going to decide the outcome of how these exclusive deals are handled on into the future.
There's another lawsuit. I should have done a little more research on it, but there's another lawsuit that'll play into this. I think it's a NFL versus American Needle. And American Needle is trying to make the claim that each team, each individual team, is its own private entity. So the Dallas Cowboys should be able to go out and solicit a deal with American Needle to make products, make hats, make jerseys on their own without having to get the NFL involved. And that'll be an interesting case to see how that works out, because I know American Needle, I think they went in and got some deals with teams, produced products, and then the league came in and said, no, you've got to get a deal with us if you're going to make anything that says NFL on it or anything that says a team name on it. If the court comes back and says, well, American Needle can go out and get a deal with an individual team, then maybe this opens up something in the trading card game where Upper Deck and Topps and some of these companies that are on the outside of looking in on an exclusive deal can now get little pieces of teams, or maybe now can go the Upper Deck route and make these kind of fringe cards that say Boston on them but don't say Red Sox and don't really have a logo kind of blaring at you.
Right. Well, Upper Deck has signed individual players, and so I guess they're taking it. I mean, they've had Pete Rose and Andy Pettit and Greg Maddux. There's been a handful of other baseball players that they have signed to kind of be the centerpiece, I guess, of their products and things like that. So we'll see what happens. The other example that I saw was a magazine, and there's tons of them out there, but the example that I saw was a magazine like Sports Illustrated. I'm not privy to their kind of contracts and that they have with the NFL and MLB, but they freely use photos. I know that they legally get those photos, and they pay money to acquire those photos, which is perfectly fine. But they make quite a bit of money on their magazine and selling ads and things like that. So, you know, but they don't have an exclusive deal. They're not the only magazine that can publish photos of college football games and, you know, the Super Bowl and things like that. So, and imagine if that happened in magazines where only Sports Illustrated or only ESPN Magazine could have photos of the Super Bowl, you know, and it'd be kind of weird. It kind of what happens in the Olympics. And that's a little bit different since it's once every 4 years, but we see these exclusive deals try to get pulled off, but very rarely do they hold up in court. So we'll see what happens. You got any other information?
That's about it as far as Upper Deck goes.
That's about it. You want to talk a little bit? We've been watching the Combine. Been watching, what was the one running back's name that was running? Was it Spiller?
CJ Spiller.
It is a 40. It doesn't really mean a whole lot, but he, compared to everybody else, I wasn't really blown away. There wasn't like multiple guys in that 4-4 range. It was really him, I think one other guy, and that was about it.
Yeah, I like him. He's going to be good. I mean, he's probably going to slip late first round. I guess mid first round, late first round. So a good team is going to get him, you know, at least a good team from this last year is going to get him. So he's explosive. There's always going to be a sleeper guy who's going to come up and play well and get an opportunity and be in the right situation and get a lot of carries and run well, like Sean Green with the New York Jets.
Like Sean Green, I was going to say, we found out today that Thomas Jones was cut. He was actually on my fantasy team. Actually did pretty well for me, so I'm sure another team will find his services appropriate for what they're trying to do. But Sean Green is another guy that was drafted, I believe, at the top of the third round, I believe, wasn't much on the radar in terms of especially sports card collecting. I mean, he still might be slightly off the radar on sports card collecting nowadays, but like my brother said, there's always sleepers. There's always going to be the running backs. The quarterbacks are definitely where it's at in this draft, and obviously many of them are too big time to throw, I guess, at the combine nowadays. I don't know how that goes. If you've never played a down in the NFL and you kind of turn your nose up to their little tryout thing, I guess it's cool for rookies to do that these days. But Tim Tebow, he participated in a few things, looked great in the vertical. I think he had a 38-inch vertical. Looked really good in the 40-yard dash. Didn't blow the Michael Vick doors off anybody, but looked pretty good. What do you think about old Tim Tebow in the NFL?
I don't know. I don't think. I'd like him to do well because I think he'd be a great story. I think he'd push the hobby. I think he'd bring people in to the hobby because there's a lot of people, fringe sports fans that know about Tim Tebow and like Tim Tebow. So if he succeeded in any level in the NFL, whether it was at quarterback or wildcat back or something, I just, when I watch him throw, his arm is just really weak. I'd put his arm kind of like in a Vince Young category. We've seen Vince Young be successful, not to the extent where he's going to the playoffs and winning games and where you'd consider Vince Young to be a top, 10, 15 quarterback. But, I think Tebow's kind of in that mold. His arm, he's got to get really sharp with that passing game because he's not just going to be able to bowl people over like he did in college. Those linebackers are just as big and bigger than he is and as faster than he is.
Right. But I think in the NFL, we've seen – I was watching – I think it was like Miami and Pittsburgh or somebody late last season. I believe it was one of the last regular season games. And Miami's starter had gotten hurt, and he actually, I think it was Chad Henne, I think is maybe their starter, and he actually can drop back and throw the ball fairly well. Well, they had another kid that they brought off the bench that was kind of their wildcat guy to start the game and play the game. And really all they did was kind of run that gimmicky. They didn't even have Rodney Brown at this point. And they ran this kind of gimmicky, kind of run the ball, hand off, like maybe kind of dump off pass kind of thing. And I actually thought it kind of worked. I think Tim Tebow could definitely fit into an offense where you didn't have, obviously, like the Tom Brady or the Peyton Manning kind of Matt Ryan or Joe Flacco kind of solidifying himself at the college or solidifying himself at the starting position. But if you had a team like Miami and like so many of these NFL teams, like Washington, there's so many, Cleveland Browns, everybody has question marks at quarterback. Oakland Raiders have question marks at quarterback. You're not looking for Tim Tebow to come in there and get you 40, 50 snaps. You're looking for him to come in there and give you maybe 10 to 15 snaps, maybe once a drive, once a series, maybe figure out a package, a second down package or a first down package where he works really well out of. And work him in. And I think he could be effective there. And I think, like you said, he could bring some people into the hobby. But there's many other quarterbacks. We've got Colt McCoy. We've got, what's his name, Sam Bradford. And there's going to be other ones. I can imagine there.
Jimmy Clausen.
There's the kid from Ohio, I guess, Pike. Tony Pike or something from Cincinnati, which I guess is in Ohio. And so we'll see. Those are going to be the cards that have big money. I see we having huge price bars where we have Tim Tebow autographs worth, in the majority of them worth in the three figures, I believe, especially just starting out. So that's going to drive up all the Sam Bradford and Colt McCoy and Jimmy Clausen fans. All four of those guys went to huge colleges with huge fan bases, and I believe that you're just going to see kind of a bidding war on who can get their quarterbacks' cards to the highest value. And I believe Tim Tebow is going to be right there setting the bar. You're going to have whoever's the number one pick, whether it's Bradford or whoever decides to go for – what's the defensive guy's from Nebraska?
I don't know how to say his name.
I don't know how to say his name either. But I think there's a defensive player that will see some love right in the beginning. And there's quite a few other players. We'll see what happens. I'm really excited. If you don't have the NFL Network and I don't even have TV. I don't even have cable TV. But I jumped on – I just searched NFL Combine on Google. And all of a sudden I found, I think it's NFL.com/combine, and I was just seeing all kinds of videos. Saw all the 40s and all the shuffles and all the bench lifting I wanted to see. So if you don't have the NFL Network, you can catch it there. I'm sure there's places on YouTube, and as we get closer to the draft, it'll be exciting as we have no football to talk about, although baseball is on the horizon, and maybe we have Dr. Phil here. I don't think he's signed up for fantasy baseball. If anybody's interested in fantasy baseball, find the thread on the Sports Card Radio fan forum or send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com, and we can get you hooked up. But maybe you got any baseball predictions, Doctor?
Any baseball predictions? Wow. I think the teams with the money are going to win. You got to like the Yankees and Red Sox again. I like the Phillies in the National League. I'm hoping the Giants are going to do well, but as far as competing with the Phillies and the Cardinals, doubtful, especially the Phillies. I really like them. And then over in the AL, I think, of course, it starts with the Yankees and the Red Sox. And, you know, go from there and see what happens.
And see what happens. So you're making the safe pick and picking the money.
Hey, it's the safe pick. I think it's a smart pick, too. You look at the Yankees, I mean, their lineup, they got Granderson now playing center field, that they got kind of in a gift trade this offseason. Pitching, you know, is going to be nice. As long as they stay healthy, their lineup is going to be the best in the league. Unless they choke, they should be there. In the National League, I could see just a repeat World Series. The Phillies look really strong. I don't know if I would have gave up on, what's his name, the pitcher they got last year and that they traded to the Mariners, but Cliff Lee. I don't know why I would have kept him, but then they brought in, Halladay, so I would have tried to run off Hamels, Halladay, and Cliff Lee. That would have been a heck of a rotation right there. You could have sewed up a World Series berth right there with the lineup they have. Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Jason Worth. So, going to be watching the Giants a lot, listening to them on the radio, following their minor league team, but I didn't expect them to, you know, do a whole lot. 90 wins would be spectacular, and if the other teams in the NL West choke, which is possible, then maybe they get in and get lucky. Tim Lincecum throw some no-hitters in the playoffs or something.
We'll see. We'll see. Who's your pick? We got a new poll up on the sportscardradio.com homepage. I think it was the best pitching prospect, investment-wise. Steven Strasburg, Aroldis Chapman, who I don't think has gotten any love yet, Madison Bumgarner, Kyle Drabek, Brian Matthews, or someone else.
Okay. I'd have to go with Strasburg on that list. Bumgarner, I've seen pitch in person, seen him pitch on TV a few times. It looked like he got tired at the end of the year. His stuff doesn't really like blow you away. His off-speed stuff is still kind of developing. In a perfect world, he'd be in AAA to start the year. He may make the team, make the Giants right off get-go, so he's out. Drabek, I think I've only seen him pitch maybe once. So he's out. What was Chapman? I heard needed a lot of work. Never seen him pitch. Heard that he kind of needed a lot of work. I think he's going to end up in AA or A to start. He's out. The Brian Matthews guy, or however you say his name, from the Orioles. He's good. Heard a lot of good things about him. Heard that he's got a lot of good pitches, and his fastball, I think, is like 92, 93. He's good, but you got to go with Strasburg. I read too much about him. Apparently, his fastball is like 98, 99 or something. I mean, when you're throwing 98, 99, and then you come back with just a below-average changeup, average changeup, you're going to get a lot of guys out, even at the major league level, just on that alone, just from the speed difference alone. Even if you just have an average changeup, you can live off that. If you're 95, 99, we're talking about heat that only like Nolan Ryan, Bob Gibson, Bob Feller, I think, supposedly could throw like 100. I mean, we're talking about only a handful of guys who can legitimately throw this fast. We hear about all these guys who, he throws 95, he throws 98. BS. When it comes down to it, there's only a few starters who can really throw that fast, and apparently this guy Strasburg is one of them. So you got to go with this guy. He'll be up to the show hopefully soon, because they need help there in Washington, and he could sell some tickets, and he's going to be good.
Well, there you have it. on a future show, we'll actually talk about 2010 Bowman Baseball, which is set to come out, I think, in about a month. That has the first certified Steven Strasburg autographs, I guess, in his Washington National uniforms, although you can go back, if you find the rookie card Rolodex on Sports Card Radio, that's probably the best place to find. He does have previous cards from his stint in the USA national team, and he has quite a few other cards. You can find them all there. That about wraps it up for today. We're just going to break it out of here right now. Hopefully you enjoyed today's show. Not exactly sure what will be on tap for the next show, but definitely some product previews. We'll hopefully bring another interview your way from a guest that we haven't had on the show before, and possibly bring Ryan back at another time to kind of maybe follow up on all this Upper Deck info. If you want to keep tabs on it, remember you can head on over to sportscardradio.com. From there, you can always head on over to sportscardreport.info if you can't remember that domain name. And that about wraps it up. You can always send me an email, sportscardshow@gmail.com. I get lots of emails. Not necessarily, I'm not saying I'm Howard Stern or anything, but I don't get a lot of fan mail, but I get lots of all kinds of spammy kind of things to that email. So please give me a few days at least to get back to you, to weed through all the spam and junk that I have to swim through in that email box. Maybe we'll change it at some point to make it a little bit easier. But that about wraps it up. You want to say later to everybody, Ryan?
Thanks. Thanks for that great shout out too. Again, you know, that was great. You know,
no problem. No problem. Just remember that sportscardradio.com, the very small amount of visitors that go there, just remember that a portion of them do frequent your site as well. And I believe that makes up your entire populace.
It probably does.
Who reads your book?
It probably does.
So appreciate any shout out you get. So that's my brother for you. We're out of here. Hopefully everybody enjoys the rest of the week. It is Monday, I believe, so don't work too hard this week. Relax if you're at work. You know, I believe in the state of California, you get two mandatory 15-minute breaks every, I think, 4 hours consecutive that you work. Something like that. I used to know it by the book. Now that I don't have a boss breathing down the back of my neck, I'm less apt to my government employment laws. But if you're at work, take your mandatory 15-minute breaks. Check your state laws and government information on that, but make sure you take that. Take your full lunch. If your employer gives you 30 minutes, do not give them the luxury of only taking 25 minutes. Take the full 30 minutes. If it's an hour, take the full hour and make sure you clock out. Make sure you leave the clock out about 3 minutes before you're actually planning on going to lunch, because you want to make up that time you're driving, getting to your car, where you're not actually eating and enjoying lunch. So that's my best advice to you. Hopefully everybody enjoyed today's show. We're out of here.